Recording. There we go. All right. Okay.
All right. You don't have to start over.
Oh, good. All right. I won't start over then.
Thanks, Mark.
Disclaimer. I am not a professional speaker. I only got a C in my high school speech class. So I didn't make it to the speech team. But, you know, I think I would have liked to have read some poetry. Especially E.E. Cummings. All of his stuff is just centered right down the middle of the line. There isn't too much punctuation. There's hardly any capitals. And I think I might have gotten it right. Okay, that one didn't work. All right. Well, every night while I've been... It's a good thing I didn't know about this weeks in advance, because every single night before I go to bed, I end up going through all kinds of stuff in my head. Oh, should I say this? Should I say not do that? What should I do? And wake up in the middle of the night, same thing all over again. So it's like, and where am I going with this? Oh, anyway, so all that rehearsing, I wish I could have given you one of those speeches, because one of them turned out pretty good. Okay, my kids have told me not to try to be funny, because I'm just plain funny on my own. Well, I still don't know whether that's a compliment or whether that's actually part of our dysfunction. So, and that comment came from the child who was the class clown. So what do you think? I don't know. Okay, so my first sponsor told me that if I prepared stuff too much, that whenever I went to share, that it fell as flat as a pancake on the floor. So now I just write a few notes and I trust my higher power. And say, okay, higher power, you know, because when you write notes and you're going to say this and you're going to say that, you don't say all of it. You just don't. I haven't anyway. In the shares that I've given, you don't know what's going to come out. And I have no idea what's going to come out. So for me, this is kind of like a trust situation. I trust my higher power, because I know my higher power knows who all of you are and all the people that are online. And Josh, there's three people in the waiting room. Sorry, I'm not supposed to know that, right?
I should stand by here.
Okay.
I'll lurk.
Are you gonna lurk?
Yeah.
Ooh, energy exchange. Ooh. Oh, I'm good. Anyway, so if you don't mind, I'd like to just say a very quick prayer before we start. Higher power, thank you for this opportunity to be of service. You know who's here today. You know who's online. You know what they need to hear. This really isn't about me. Even though it's my story, it's really not about me. And I'm thankful for that. I'm just another person that has been through a journey. And I pray that you would give them each their golden nugget that they can take home with them today, to give them courage, to have strength and hope in their own recovery. Amen. Thank you. Oh boy, I'm gonna turn the page. Okay, so what was life before recovery? Well, pretty much all of the laundry list. I'll give you a couple of the highlights. Super duper people pleaser. I was taught as an adult, and I mean, as a child by my father, that I was supposed to anticipate what everybody else needed. You notice, I noticed that thing coming up on, you know, that's just an example of that. oh, Josh, you need to come do this. No, no, not really. Not this moment. But that's, I didn't find out until this last year that that's a horrible thing that he put me through. So, and by looking at me, you may think that I've been in this program a long time. No, I just had my first anniversary on May the 30th. So it's been a roller coaster year, and my higher power has just been exploding all kinds of stuff. We'll get to that later. Okay, so part of before life before recovery, super duper codependent relationships. My first marriage, my love for him was going to be big enough to solve all of his issues from when he was young, and it's going to take care of all of it, and me too. Wrong, that didn't happen. And now with the second marriage, it's, I can prove to you that I won't turn my back on you like all the other women you've had. Well, that's not working out so great either. Anyway, so now there's two more in the waiting room. They keep coming back. What do they keep coming back for? See? Okay. All right. So what else was there in recovery? A difficult time being alone. I had three older brothers. They were 8, 9, and 11 when I was born. And of course, you know, I'm the only girl, but I wanted to be like them. I wanted to do everything they did. And the answer was always, no, it's not safe. It's not safe. We lived on a farm to start with. So that was one of the things I got told all the time. That and, oh, you shouldn't feel like that. I'd rather you felt like whatever, you know. We grew up with this standard that we were supposed to live by, and it wasn't always easy. I was kind of a free spirit. I loved running around the farm, looking at all the animals, playing around, and I didn't get to do all the fun stuff that my older brothers got to do. You think that goes on my resentment list? Okay, so later on, I became a big time victim, especially when it was situations. They were always other people's faults, especially if it was work related. Anybody ever been there? And I was super over-responsible when I was raising my kids. There's another one. No, what does that say? Yeah, it says admit. You want me to just push the button? Yeah. Okay, there. All right, Darren. Anyway, where was it? Oh, yeah, over-responsible with my kids and my first husband. You know, I thought I knew everything. I was never wrong. I had it together. I could do this, you know. But as you can see, I'm still not with him. I'm still his friend. We buried the hatchet later on, but, you know, we're still friends at least. And some people think that is super weird. Did you ever notice that? If you're friends with your ex, people think that that is weird, but they do. Anyway. So I'm almost done with this list. Okay, so low self-esteem. I couldn't accept a compliment because everything I ever did was never perfect. So, you know, that performance, everything's got to be the best that you can be and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know. Years ago, somebody just said, well, just say thank you. You know, I'm going, what? Just say thank you. But it wasn't, you know, I don't know anybody else that ever did that either. Okay, I knew that there was something wrong as a child because of the way my parents fought. I don't know how many times we'd end up on the way to church and they're rearing at each other. And, you know, they get out of the car, shut the car door, they walk around and they're just as happy as can be. And they're so nice to everybody else. And I'm going, oh, I probably better not swear, right? What is up with this? This is just wrong. Why are they doing this? So I knew that there was something wrong early on, but I didn't know how to do anything about it. I got into trouble one time trying to fix that. And based on what my parents said, I never did that again either. So it's like, you know, what goes on between us stays between us. You know, you don't go telling everybody what goes on in our family. That's just not the way it works. Well, and then in 1977, I knew I was in big trouble. I woke up one day and it was just like, I woke up and it was like, my husband and I had recreated everything that my parents were doing. The way they fought, the way they did stuff. It's like, I wasn't going to be like them. How in the heck did this happen? So I started looking around for help. Well, the only thing around at that time was EA, Emotions Anonymous, or there was another group at a church not too far from where I lived. It was called Guide for Living. And I looked it up on Google the other night and I can't find it anywhere. So it must not have survived. But I don't know. I ended up being a dropout out of those two programs because I couldn't make the changes that I wanted for me. And I couldn't make those changes happen for my husband either or anybody else that I was sticking my business nose in their business. So that was a little disappointed for me. Anyway, back to teenage years. I was abandoned when my brothers, God forbid, they all grew up, went to college, got married, moved away. And here I'm stuck at home with my mom and dad, and I'm the focus of their nye. There's different ways to raise a girl than raising a boy. You know, I don't know how many times I heard that. And I wasn't supposed to hear any of this. I heard this all from my bedroom and they're down in the kitchen. Well, it was a tiny little house. I heard everything, especially since they had big voices. So anyway, but I felt abandoned when they left. Because when they'd write letters, I mean, this is back in the days when kids wrote letters home. Not like now, if you're lucky to hear from them. Anyway, when they'd write a letter to mom and dad, the only thing that they would say about me was, say hi to Martha. And I felt invisible. I felt completely invisible. And it's like, wow, I wish I could do something to change this. But that didn't happen either. So before I started ACA, I don't have a lot of childhood memories. And I've always wondered about that. Always wondered, you know, because my husband now, you know, spouts off about all these wonderful things that went on in his childhood. And he knows this and he remembers that and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, how come I don't have more memories than I do? I don't quite get that. Why not? Okay, so I ended up divorcing my first husband. And then the second relationship I had was 15 months from the time that I met him until the time he dropped over dead with a heart attack. So that was one of the first super big examples of shock and grief for me. Yes, years ago, when I was 27, my oldest brother died, but I could never get my parents to talk about it. I could never get them to talk about the grieving process and how we maneuver through something like this as a family. How does this work? I didn't get it. But this occurrence was a big deal for me, and I was in mourning for a really long time. Well, and then I got together with my second husband, and I'd known him for 10 years before that in church. Our families were friends. My kids used to babysit his kids. He's really not that much younger than me. Okay. That makes it sound worse than it is. But anyway, so it was, we'd always had a lot of fun. I always thought I could talk to him about everything. Yeah, that worked as friends. Not always so much now that we've been spouses for almost 25 years. But I don't know. My sponsor tells me that relationships get harder the longer they go on. So I'm kind of thinking how this is all going to work out. But we'll see. So we came from similar backgrounds. We're both the youngest in the family. And he was worried about whether that was going to work or not. Because I think, typically the youngest one wants to be the star of attraction. So, and I already was, because I had three older brothers, right? I was the only girl. So, but anyway, that's enough of that. So for the first 20 years, it was like bliss. You know, we had this awesome relationship, hardly any arguments. I think at one time we said there had been 3 arguments during that 20 years. And we started out saying no shame, no blame, no guilt, that we weren't going to talk to each other the way we had been talked to before. Okay, well, that worked out pretty good. Except that when we talked about some stuff, I didn't always tell the truth. You know, when he was talking about his ex and what she did and how horrible all that was, I'm sitting there going, shoot, I do that once in a while too. Do I dare tell him that? No, I don't think I will. So, because of that codependent behavior, I stuffed it for a lot of time. And over the years, I kind of lost my vigor and my identity. So when we got in our 60s, that's when a lot of the trouble started. He got laid off at 62, so that meant he was home most of the time, except for when he had temporary jobs. Our sexuality fell off. He moved out of the bedroom, out of the closet, out of the drawers. And I felt abandoned all over again, just like what had happened when I was young. And I think I probably got a lot more critical, had more criticism, bad attitude toward life. And work wasn't easy for me. I wanted to work until I was retired, and it looked like I was going to maybe make it. But the last year I worked, I had 3 supervisors. And the last supervisor I had was told to document everything about me. So needless to say, when my review came around, it didn't turn out very well. And I talked to a former supervisor that I had, and she said, I don't think you're going to fight this one. So it's up to you. What do you want to do? Whether you want to stay and live through under this stress and this tension, or whether you want to go. And I talked to my husband that day, and he said, well, pack up your stuff and come home. You don't have to do this. After all, for the last year, all you've ever done is either come home mad or come home crying. So, you know, I was grateful for that kind of support from him. The worst part of it is that a week or so before this happened, his oldest son died. And then the memorial service came a week or so later. That was on a Friday. And my review was on a Monday. So it was like major shock and trauma again, and grief, 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 grief. I'm pretty sure that I sat for 6 months on the couch. I don't remember doing much then. And, you know, how to navigate retirement with a husband. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, you guys. Sometimes you have to navigate retirement with a wife too. So it's not just one-sided. But I tried to find things to do. And I found out that a lot of myself I had defined by my work. After college, I taught for a year. And then after that, I taught piano lessons. And I gave piano lessons to hundreds of students. And then when my first husband and I got divorced, then I needed to get back in the corporate world so I'd have some medical and more wages. So that's kind of how that went. Okay, so what led me to ACA? I was always looking for something to make my life better. Always. You know, I had a girlfriend that was insatiable when that was came to that kind of thing. She thought that every, what do they call those things? Multi-marketing, multi-level MLMs. That's what it is. She thought every one of those had the answer. So she went from one to the other to the other and tried all different kinds of things, tried different kinds of spirituality. And sometimes I could follow her and sometimes I just couldn't. Just couldn't do what she was doing just because I couldn't do it. Anyway, so I've always had counselors off and on. There's been a few times I've had some pretty good depression. Thankfully, I never allowed myself to be put on meds because I was told that because of a medical condition that I had, that it would be better if I just talked my way out of it every time. That's hard work. That's really hard work. And you don't always get out of it when you'd like to get out of it. So anyway, I've had people that I talked to all along once in a while. And then everything started really going downhill. 2016, my husband's sister died. And the next year, well, in between that, his brother was an alcoholic and he lived with us for 2 months in 2017 and 4 months with us in 2016. And I didn't know anything about alcoholism and neither did he. He thought he did because he thought he was his brother's sponsor, you know, from years and years and years and years ago when he first entered the program. But I can tell from what I've read now that we did not treat that situation very well. So his sister died in 16. His brother died in 17 from, you guessed it, alcoholism. So then I didn't know what to do. So I had heard about a counselor that also had prayer attached to it. I won't go into all the details about that, but I met with her for 4 months. And then my daughter's husband was arrested in Texas. So I packed myself up and my little dog, and I went to Texas to try and help her out. I was there for 2 months. She lost everything. And things weren't so great between my husband and I at that time because I missed being with him at Christmas and I missed our 20th wedding anniversary. And somehow I don't think that still is healed over. And then in February of 2018, my daughter decided she was moving back to Minnesota. So we packed up what little stuff she could bring home and came back. And she and her daughter moved in with us. And that created some more tension and stress. Not that I would ever go back and wish we hadn't done it. I'm glad that we did. But we came back in February. In March, I started a 12-step program, thinking I needed help with understanding what alcoholism was. I needed all kinds of help. And the month after that, in April, I was fighting for my life. I ended up in the hospital. I thought I had a bad flu. I ended up in the hospital. I had diseased diverticulitis. They took out a section of my colon. They couldn't put it back together again, so they gave me a bag. And then after, I was in the ICU room for a week. Didn't know anything or anybody. I had worked for a healthcare company and my two worst nightmares happened that week. I was tube fed and respirated, you know, to keep me alive. So I woke up a week later, didn't know where I was or why I had gotten there. And the recovery wasn't so great. I ended up having complications after that surgery. There was a little thing that didn't work so right in that surgery. I got major abscess and fistulas. I don't know what if you know what fistulas are, but they're little tubes that attach themselves to other openings. And so 4 months later, I had to have another major operation and they had to repair all of that. And after that, the surgeon said, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to hook you back up again because there's been too much damage. So, you know, I'm adjusting to all this, trying to figure out what I can eat and what I can't eat. And besides those two hospitalizations, I was also in the hospital 4 times that year from blockages. There's quite a bit of narrowing in certain parts of my intestines. So they had to take out more pieces then. So it turned out I was in the hospital 6 times that year. And it equals, when you add up all the days, it's like 2 months when I was in the hospital. And I don't remember so much if it was that year or the year afterwards where I really got so low that I really wanted to commit suicide. I thought people would be better off without me. But then my daughter said to me one day, she goes, Mom, it doesn't matter what you can do. It doesn't matter what you can't do. As long as you're here to talk to me, that's what I need. I need you here to talk to me. So then that gave me hope that I should keep living. Maybe higher power had something for me somewhere along the line. I didn't know where, but somewhere. Anyway, so I didn't get to go to too many meetings that year in 18 because I was on home care and I was depending on my husband to drive me. So, but he took me to a few and I bought the literature for that program and read as much as I could. So that helped a lot. And then in January of 19, then I was able to go to meetings on my own and started really into it, you know, going to regular meetings and reading the literature and learning. There's always a lot to learn in a 12-step program. Anyway, so then I got a sponsor. And at that time, about Easter that spring, she said, I think you ought to go to this other program so that you could learn more about the disease. So I thought, okay, I'll go. So I started going there and I thought, well, I don't have the disease. I have, you know, no problems here. Except after the first meeting, I recognized that they had a lot of the behaviors that I had. So, oops. Okay, so what am I going to do with this? How am I going to do with this? And so that was more, I think all of this is partly coming out of denial. You know, being exposed to all this kind of starts pricking you a little bit. And you think, oh, I've got to come out of denial when it comes to this kind of stuff. So by the summer of that year, 19, I wasn't doing real well in the program. And my sponsor said, you need to go to more meetings. So you need to go to one every day, find one. So it was then that I found out an ACA program that was meeting at the place where I was going to these other meetings. So I started going to them. Except that after I came out of the meeting, I was a mess. I had been triggered right and left. Anytime they talked about violence, anytime they talked about the behavioral stuff, I was a mess. I came out of those meetings worse than when I went in, I thought. Anyway, so I talked to my counselor about that. And she said, well, maybe this isn't the time right now. Maybe you ought to back off. And I had done my 6 meetings. So you would have thought that it would have gotten a little better, right? Well, it didn't. Anyway, so I did, the next year I did a 4th and 5th step with this lady. And that was a horrible experience. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. That's the real reality. I was paralyzed by it. And she would ask me every day, so how's your 4th step coming? How's it coming? We need to get this done. And I'm going, whoa, okay. So I did it. And I did the 4th step in September of that year. And that was a good experience. You know, I found out that, you know, I wasn't as bad as she was. And that, you know, everything that we do in recovery is for a reason. You know, a lot of it's our survival techniques, our coping mechanisms from when we were young. So anyway, so that was my first experience coming into ACA, excuse me. And as you got, I ended up dropping out there too. So hang on a second. I'm talking and not reading. Okay, so, you know, life just kind of went on, meeting to meeting to meeting. Things weren't going all that great with some of my relationships. And I had seen, and COVID had happened, and I had seen in one of the ACA meetings, somebody that I recognized from one of the other meetings that I went to. So I called them up and I said, I don't know, it just seems like there's something not there enough in these other 2 programs that I'm doing. And talked to them about it. And they said, well, why don't you try an ACA meeting? And he told me about the one on Zoom that they were in and that I'm in now. And so I did. I tried it. And I thought, and I was surprised that I wasn't triggered as much as I had been when I was at the in-person meetings, which kind of surprised me. And I thought, well, Well, maybe I have learned a little bit of something from the 12 steps that programs that I've been attending. So that's good. That's good. So then I started coming to meetings all the time. That was Memorial Day weekend last year. And I thought it was kind of funny because in the meeting, they always have a spot in there where they ask people if they want to be a temporary sponsor. And this one person every week raised their hand. And I'm going, well, what's up with that? How come nobody else is volunteering? You know, I'm probably the only new one here. How come nobody else is volunteering? You know, so the rejection's starting to hit in, you know. Nobody wants me. Anyway, so after, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, I called them up and I said, well, could you be my temporary sponsor? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going, wow, I didn't expect that response. Yeah, I'll be happy to. I'm going, okay. So then she told me, get the yellow book. Get the yellow book. Let's start into the steps. I was like, what do I need this for? I've done the steps in these other two programs. Why do I need this one? But, you know, that's the childhood resistance coming up. Anyway, so I ordered the book and got it. And we started working into it. So it was like, we talked once a week. And I kept getting triggered over and over and over and over. And finally, after a few weeks, she said to me, would you like to be able to process some of this stuff that you keep getting triggered over? And I go, well, yeah, is that even possible? Is it actually possible that you can process it and let it go? Well, yeah, I know a method. So, you know, do you want to try it? And I go, all right, I'll try it. And it's actually what they call breath trauma work. So the important part is that when you're doing it, you're breathing, you're doing everything you can to relax your body. In other words, get out of the autonomic nervous system. Because once you're in that autonomic nervous system, everything is a threat. I mean, a year ago, standing up here would have been a big major threat. You know, telling my story to other people would have been a big threat. But it's not so much now. You know, I hear people say that, well, I don't want to do any trauma work. I don't want to have to go for counseling for that or go to therapy for that or do anything special for that because I know once I start, I'm going to start bawling and I'm never going to be able to quit. Well, I can promise you that every tear jag only lasts for 20 minutes and no more. No more. I don't know. After that, the tears just dry up. I don't know. I haven't been able to get any longer than that. So I think that's good. I think that's good that you can see the end of the tunnel. You know, it's like, okay, if I can just get through these horrible feelings right now and be okay, then maybe I can process it at the end of it. So you work to soften your body. You think about being 100% safe. Because see, when you're in that autonomic nervous system, you're not safe. Everything's a threat. Everything's scary, frightening. You know, somebody's going to say something to me and I'm just going to freak out. Or they're not going to like me because I did this or that or whatever. You know, it's just going to be bad. But the important part is that when you're actually are doing that kind of work, that trauma work, that you don't think about the story. Okay, so if I think about how when my brothers left me, how that triggered me, and I think about the story that goes around behind all of that, I can remunerate that over and over and over and over again throughout my lifetime. And I never process it. I never actually let it go. And I think that's one of the things that ACA is here for, is to actually help us let that stuff go. It was there for a reason. Our little inner child needed all that help during the time, but we're adults now. We need to be able to look at our reactions. I mean, I don't know how many times somebody has said something to me and I've reacted like a 7-year-old, you know? So I don't know, I guess I just found out that it's just really important to do what we can to process it. So, All right, I got a question for you. You want to try it? You do? Oh dear. All right, well then the end of this little talk is gonna kind of get all scrunched together. So you need to close your eyes. Now, I would bet that there was something I said that triggered you. Can you think about what it was that I said that triggered you? Now, don't go into the story that goes around in your head about that trigger. Do you know what I'm saying? Don't go with that story. Instead, I want you to concentrate on what's going on inside of your body. Do you have tension in your chest? Do you feel like your arms and legs just want to fight, want to throw, like you want to throw a temper tantrum, like when you were little? Do you feel like your intestines are just all tied up in knots? What kind of feelings are you feeling in your body? Only think about those. Don't think about the story. You know what triggered you. But think about how that trigger affects your physical body. Now I need you to take a big breath. Why don't you take a couple more? Try and relax as much as you can. I want you to think about being 100% safe. There's nothing in this spot right now that can hurt you. There isn't anyone in this room that can hurt you, not even yourself. Just think about being 100% safe. Keep feeling the feelings. Notice what they are. And keep taking some big breaths. So the question is that feeling that you had when we started, when I had you shut your eyes, as intense as it was when you started? If it's not, then shake your head a little bit. No. Okay. All right. Just keep breathing. Keep thinking about being 100% safe. Just keep thinking that those feelings. It's okay to be uncomfortable with those feelings and that you can get through it. And that when you feel comfortable enough to let it go, then take another big breath and open your eyes. You're smiling. I like that. You're smiling. Okay. So how are things now for me? Well, I still have to work on shock and grief because in this last year and a half of COVID, I have lost over 40 people. And I just lost a really super good friend in early May. And I had no idea that losing that kind of support was going to hurt so bad. So part of what I work on constantly is work on that kind of trauma, that kind of shock, that kind of grief. So, and that I'm learning to live with the big feelings, that I can be uncomfortable and have big feelings and still be okay. That I don't have to run in terror, you know, that it's going to be all right, that I can learn and that I can help myself through it. You won't believe this, but in the yellow book, I'm just now starting the fourth step because I've been through so much trauma work with my sponsor, but I'm not as terrified of it this time. It's like, oh, I'm wondering what interesting things I'm going to come up with, or I'm curious about it. It's like, okay, what's the next level? What's it going to be like this time? Because this inventory is different than the other inventory I took. So I'm not as terrorized by it anymore. I think that's awesome. I'm learning how to stay self-regulated. When people say stuff that makes no sense to me and I want to go off on them or they trigger me or whatever is happening, what we just did with the breath work is kind of what they call self-regulation, learning how to self-regulate. And so, you know, that's part of my day, every single day, you know. So, but the biggest plus for me is that I have so many more days of peace and serenity. You know, I brought my little friends with me. My little inner child said, bring your friends with. This my daughter and my granddaughter gave me. It's a squishmallow. Can you say that? I couldn't. My granddaughter would say, it's a squishmallow. I'm going, oh, what? I couldn't say it for anything. Anyway, my daughter had a little operation and I ended up having to stay over at her house for a couple of days. And my granddaughter has a collection. And anyway, so I found out how nice it is to get a squishmallow hug. And my little inner child was happy. I wasn't supposed to play and have fun when I was little. Anyway, so I actually got something I wanted for Christmas.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And then there's Grogu. Do you all know who he is? I discovered one day that he's an adult child. He's 50 years old and he's an infant. Of course, you know, lived to 900, right? But that made me happy when I found out that he was an adult child. That just really made my day. Oh, sorry. This is hungry. This is hungry. Heidi. This is Hope. I needed something little to sleep with. My inner child said, you know, your childhood was kind of, it wasn't what you wanted. And it's okay. It doesn't matter that you're as old as you are. You can have a little, you can have a little buddy to sleep with. It's all good. No worries. So with that, I think I'd like to end with the ACA Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks for listening. My name is Ashley. Hi, Ashley. I didn't even see you, Canoe. Yay. Who else is there? Nobody else I know. I love you anyway. Oh, and if you're interested, want to see something, like, I made this book in a class that I took. It's autobiography up until, what, 2005, something like that. So if you want to see the little farm that I grew up on, I had no idea that we were as poor as we were. We had to share crop with my grandfather. Grandfather, one person, right? My family, mother, father, four kids. He got the same amount of money as we did. You think that goes on my resentment list? Okay, I'm done.
Thank you again so much, Martha. All right, so that's all the programming we have planned for today. We do have water and coffee over here. There's a seventh tradition donation jar, and that all goes directly towards making events like this happen. If you're online and you want to make a contribution, we do have a link on adultchildrenmn.org at the bottom of the page for PayPal. So yeah, lots of thanks coming in from the online chat. We're so grateful that you found us today or joining us here remotely, everyone there. So thanks for your patience as we got everything started. So I hope you all, it's a beautiful day here, and I hope it's beautiful wherever you are, and wish you all the best in your continued recovery. So I'll just leave it on in case anyone wants to chat online, make connections there online, but we won't, I'll turn off the speaker. So take good care, everybody online, and hope to see you in some way, shape, or form soon. All right.